too. There's a chimpanzoo that's run by a chimpanzee. It's an oddish place where the human race is under lock and key. And on their backs there are small plaques for the animals to view, which specify the reasons why they're locked in the chimpanzoo. If you're boisterous and bumptious, you're grist for the chimpanzoo. If you're overly rambunctious, you're whisked to Timbuktu. Loss, loss is nothing but loss, but you know who's laughing at who? It's the animals there who giggle and stare at you in a chimpanzoo. It takes a lot of talent and time to become a West End attraction, but in this place one rude remains gets a marvelous reaction. Laughs, laughs, nothing but laughs, but you know who's laughing at you? It's the animals there who giggle and stare, gape with glee incredulously at the boisterous, bumptious, rowdy crew. At you in the chimpanzoo.
Hello, friend. Say, what do you suppose is the most important part of your body? Well, some people might say the feet are the most important since we all have to walk. Others say the eyes, because seeing is so necessary. It would be difficult to get along without the hands, wouldn't it? Or you might think the heart is the most important part since its beating shows that we're alive. Well, all of these, hands, feet, eyes, heart, and the ears, the nose, the mouth, too, are all very important. But the most important of all is the brain. The brain of man is a wonderful, partly mysterious organ that it has taken nature millions of years to create. Which do you think is the most important part? Some say the eyes, some say the heart. Some say the mouth, and some others say the nose. Some say the bones on which you hang your clothes. Some say the lungs for the air we breathe. And if you like to eat, you might say the teeth. Some say the feet, and some people say the hands. But I say the brain, because it makes the plans. The brain is very necessary, 'cause it makes the plans. Now which do you think is the most important part? Some say the eyes, but some say the heart. Some say the mouth, and some others say the nose. Some say the bones on which you hang your clothes. Some say the lungs for the air we breathe. And if you like to eat, you might say the teeth. Some say the feet, and some people say the hands. But I say the brain, because it makes the plans. The brain is very necessary, 'cause it makes the plans.
Yes, the brain is the part of the body that makes all the other parts work. It's something like a big switchboard from which the orders go out to the rest of the body.
Walk, feet.
Pick up that baseball, hands.
Watch out for that automobile, eyes.
Smell that flower, nose.
Years ago, there used to be an actor in the movies called Mantan Moreland. I remember a scene where he thought he saw a ghost. He wanted to run away, so he said, "Feet, get moving." It made everyone laugh. But actually, the brain sends out messages of that sort all day long, although it doesn't have to transmit actual words to the various parts of the body. To help it decide what you ought to do, the brain takes in messages from the various parts of the body. The senses, such as the sense of sight, the sense of smell, of touch, of hearing, gather this information for the brain.
Why do you suppose if
Everybody seems to have a nose. Everybody has an eye or two.
I know, do you?
A nose is made to smell all the flowers in the dell on a lovely day in spring. Your eyes were meant to see every single tree. Now isn't that a wonderful thing?
Why on earth, my dear, does everybody have a pair of ears?
Everybody has a mouth as well.
I'm here to tell you the marvelous reason ears were meant to hear
music loud and clear.
Kissing and whistling and smiling and talking and such. Now isn't it wonderful we all can do so much? Isn't it wonderful we all can do so much?
Now, how do you suppose the brain receives and sends out messages? Well, you know, when you turn on a light, electric current flows through a thin wire till it gets to a light bulb, and it makes the light bulb shine. All over your body, there are very tiny wires called nerves that run from the brain to all parts of your body and back again. The central switchboard, the brain, actually has about 10 billion nerve cells. And 24 hours a day, they're constantly receiving and sending out messages by means of electrical impulses that travel from 2 to 200 miles an hour. The brain, which rests very comfortably inside your hard skull, so it'll be well protected, is not really just one large organ, but has separate sections that take care of different kinds of jobs. Let me tell you about four of these sections. Inside and underneath is a part called the cerebellum. It's connected to the brain stem, which comes up out of the backbone. The backbone, you see, protects big bundles of nerves. The cerebellum mostly takes care of information coming from the muscles and helps send messages back to the muscles so that you can move around and jump and walk and throw things and dance and so forth. Thank goodness that you got a cerebellum. If they ask you just what is it, well, you tell them. If you didn't have one, you would surely lie there till the buzzards came along and said, oh, hi there. When you were a baby, your cerebellum helped you to learn to crawl, then later to stand up, to walk, and to run. It remembers all the separate little parts of these movements for you so that you can do them while thinking of something else. Thank goodness that you've got a cerebellum. If they ask you just what is it, well, you tell them. If you didn't have one, you would surely lie there till the buzzards came along and said, oh, hi there. Just above the cerebellum is a section called the thalamus. The thalamus has a very pleasant job. It receives all those interesting messages from the eyes, the ears, the nose, and the skin. For example, when you say you're hearing the Beatles or seeing a sunset or feeling the water when you go swimming, it's mostly the thalamus that actually enjoys all these lovely sensations.
The thalamus does a marvelous thing. Sees objects move and hears bells ring. It tells if things are cold or hot. If you taste or smell, it tells you what. Woo! The thalamus does marvelous thing, sees objects move and hears bells ring. Well, it tells if things are cold or hot. If you taste or smell, it tells you what.
One of the most interesting parts of the brain lies just above the thalamus. It's called the limbic system. Believe it or not, It's the place where emotions come from. The word emotion sounds like motion, doesn't it? And that helps you to understand its meaning. An emotion is a feeling that moves you to act one way or another. Feeling happy is an emotion. Feeling sad is an emotion. Feeling frightened is another, and so is feeling angry.
The limbic system tells when you're sad, when you're afraid, or when you're glad. When you're fierce as a lion, or peaceful as a dove. And the best of all, it helps you love.
Would you feel angry if somebody stole your favorite toy? Certainly you would. But if you didn't have a limbic system in your brain, you wouldn't. You'd just stand by and watch somebody run off with your roller skates or your baseball or your toy car, and you wouldn't feel any emotion at all. Now, in the case of unpleasant emotions, you might think that wouldn't be such a bad idea. But unfortunately, you wouldn't feel the nice emotions either. If your father or uncle picked you up and gave you a big kiss, you wouldn't feel happy the way you do now. Or if your mother or grandmother tucked you into bed at night and told you a nice story. Without a limbic system, you wouldn't enjoy that at all. And you wouldn't feel good about eating ice cream or going on a picnic either. So it's a good thing we all have limbic systems in our brains.
Well, the limbic system tells when you're sad, when you're afraid, or when you're glad. When you're fierce as a lion, or peaceful as a dove. And the best of all, it helps you love. Best of all, it helps you love. It helps you love.
The fourth part of the brain is the one you and I are most interested in now, because up to now, all the brain functions we've been talking about are pretty much the same as for animals. You see, dogs and cats and monkeys and giraffes, too, can all see and hear and smell and run and jump and play and be frightened or have a good time. But the fourth part of the brain, the cortex, is something very special to man. Part of the cerebrum, it's just a thin, wrinkled, gray covering that fits over the top of the brain. And it's the part we think with, and remember with, and decide with. The cortex is a fantastically complicated computer with billions of cells capable of storing and sorting out a tremendous amount of information. All of this electrical activity in the cerebral cortex uses up a great deal of energy. That's why sometimes you can feel tired after doing a lot of hard thinking or doing homework, just as you may feel tired after doing hard physical work. Another amazing thing about the cortex is that different parts of it take care of different activities of the body. One part, for example, controls your ability to speak. Another part might have to do with remembering things that you've seen or heard.
Cortex, a computer, it's a real troubleshooter, 'cause it helps to organize the things you learn. Well, it takes the information that you get from each sensation, commits everything to memory in its turn. It helps you to remember, speak and think, and does it all much quicker than a wink. You'll need a note club or revolver, for your cortex problem solver will apply the rules of reason for you. If you know enough not only to come out of the rain, but to invent an umbrella, then let me explain. You're using the highest part of your brain, the cortex. I said the cortex, Mr. Cortex, we love.
For thousands of years, parents and teachers have taught little children how to read, how to write, how to work with numbers, and how to do other things. Oddly enough, apparently no one has ever taught little children how to think. Partly as a result, few people are really excellent at thinking, just as few people are especially good at playing the piano or running with a football or working out very difficult mathematical problems. Each of us is provided with a brain, but few people are given any instruction in how to use the thinking or reasoning parts of their brains. What I'm trying to do is to teach you about your own wonderful brain and how to use it. If you use it as wisely as possible, in the long run, your life will very probably be happier, you'll get along better with other people, and life will be less difficult for you than it may sometimes seem now. The wonderful news is that just by deciding to do so, you can help the cortex of your brain make better decisions, help it to make better judgments about the 1,001 pieces of information it receives every minute of the day. Here are 9 simple rules that help me to think better. They should be helpful to you too. Here's rule number 1. Control your emotions. Let's suppose someone is mean to you. There are some people who believe that the thing to do in that sort of a situation is to get even. But you can never really get even. Usually what you do by acting mean yourself is cause more trouble. You may make the other person angrier than he was before, and then he may do something even more harmful to you. This is not to say that you may never stand up for your rights, but in most instances, by acting like a better person yourself, you may shame the mean person into wanting to act in a more decent manner. If you act the way the other person did, then you sink to his level. But if you show him good example, you may lift him to your level. Remember, any dumbbell can pick up a stick and hit somebody else over the head with it. But a person who knows how to think, a person who will use his intelligence, will usually act in a more human way. Why do I use the word human? Well, because those who let their emotions, from the limbic system, you remember, those who let their emotions overrule the cortex are letting the animal part of their natures overrule the human part. Such people often become angrier than they should, tend to have a great many arguments, perhaps to cry a great deal, to be frightened more than they should, and all in all, to cause themselves a great deal of trouble. Now, emotions are important and necessary, but you must try to see that the cortex is the boss, so that you can become the master of your emotions and not let your emotions become the master of you.
Control your emotions as much as you can. Little babies can't do it, but a real man can. Whenever you're sad, don't let your emotions be the boss. Control your emotions as much as you can. Monkeys can't do it, but humans sure can. Whenever you're angry or feeling blue, don't let your emotions give orders to you.
Now here's rule number 2 for good thinking. Understand the difference between fact and opinion. A fact is something that is really true. For example, The first president of the United States of America was George Washington. That's a fact. It's also a fact that you're listening to my voice right now. But let's suppose you and a friend are eating, banana ice cream cones, and I ask you both, does banana ice cream taste delicious? You might say,
oh, yeah.
And your friend might say,
yuck, no.
Now, which is fact and which is opinion? Well, both the yes and the no are opinions. An opinion just tells how you feel about something, whether you like it or not. Now, it would be very silly for you and your friend to argue about the banana ice cream, because both of you are giving your honest opinion. Nobody is right, and nobody is wrong. It's perfectly okay to have opinions. We all have thousands of them. But don't make the mistake of thinking that your feelings about things are the same as facts. Another kind of opinion might be called a wrong fact. For example, it may be your opinion that the state of Florida is just north of California, but it isn't. So you can have an opinion about a fact, and your opinion may be right or wrong. The important thing is, remember the difference between facts and opinions.
Well, hello, little Joe. Now what do you know? That two and two are four. Very good, know anything more that an apple has a core. Oh, well, hello there, Pearl, you're a smart little girl. You know that the earth is round. Vibrations make a sound, and there's iron in the ground. Now you're sharp as an axe if you know that facts are the only things we say are true. There are some who are so darn dumb, they don't know that opinions are offered to you. Well, hello.
Hello, kids. Did you know the second most important part of the human body? Well, my opinion is that it's the heart. Deep inside your chest, your heart muscle contracts, beats about once every second throughout your life. Each heartbeat pushes blood out of the heart's two ventricles into arteries that carry the blood to all parts of the body, including the lungs. After the heart contracts and relaxes, as blood from all over the body through veins into the heart's two atria. I like to do experiments because I am, a scientist. So let's do an experiment. Things that you will need for this experiment are a stethoscope, or a partner, and a clock with a second hand. Place the ear tips in your ears and the chest piece slightly to the left of the center of your chest. Move the chest piece slightly until you hear the heart sounds clearly, like this. Listen for 2 seconds and close to session. The first is a relatively long, bounding sound. The second is a short, sharp sound. Together, they sound like... The lug is caused by the contracting heart muscle and the closing of the valves between the atria and the ventricles. The dub is the sound of the aortic pulmonary valves slamming shut as the heart relaxes. If you don't have a stethoscope, you can hear the same sounds by placing your ear against the chest of your partner. Your partner will probably want to hear your heart as well. While listening to a heart, count the number of times it beats in 1 minute. Does it agree with the count you measure by taking your pulse? The number of times your heart beats in 1 minute is your heart rate. It is the number of beats per minute. What is your heart rate? Let's hear more about the brain.
Rule number 3. Look for the evidence before making up your mind. Here's an important word.
Scientific.
The scientist is a man who has learned how to think, at least about scientific matters. That's why he can do so many amazing things. Many people believe almost any darn thing they're told, especially if it sounds like something they already believe. But a scientist isn't supposed to believe anything much unless it's supported by evidence. Evidence is an important word, too. As you go through life, don't be quite so ready to accept things as true unless there's some kind of evidence or proof to back them up. For example, millions of people used to believe that the Earth was flat. Yes, they really did. But gradually, scientific evidence showed that it was round. Even then, it took a surprisingly long time for the flat Earth people to admit that they had been wrong. They resisted the new evidence for as long as they could. Common thing.
It's a scientific fact.
A scientific fact.
It has to be correct.
It has to be exact.
Because it is a scientific fact. It's a scientific fact that our high and low tides are caused by the gravitational pull of the moon. It's been proven to be true, like one and one are two. It's checked and double-checked, a fact that can be backed. Because it is a scientific fact. It's a scientific fact that there are belts of radiation in outer space which are a hazard for future space flyers to overcome. It's a scientific fact.
A scientific fact.
It has to be correct.
It has to be exact.
Because it is a scientific fact. Well, of course, even scientific facts are not perfectly exact, but they are as exact as it is humanly possible to make them at the time.
It's a scientific fact, a scientific fact. It has to be correct, it has to be exact. Because it is a scientific fact.
Lastly, don't make up your mind without enough evidence. Once upon a time, there were several blind men who were taken to a zoo to visit an elephant. One blind man reached out and felt the elephant's tail. Ah, he said, I see, an elephant is very much like a rope. The second blind man touched only the trunk. Well, well, he said, so an elephant is a thing like a snake. The third blind man felt one of the elephant's legs, so he thought that an elephant was a creature built like a tree. The fourth blind man happened to feel the elephant's big side. He thought the elephant, therefore, was like a wall. The fifth blind man, since all he touched was the ivory tusk, supposed that an elephant was something like a sword. These five men got into a terrible argument, and of course they were all wrong. Why?
Not enough evidence.
Right. A sixth blind man listened to the other five, so he was able to figure out what an elephant really looked like.
Look for the evidence before you're sure, or else your thinking is pretty poor. I'll be a little skeptical, play it cool, and you'll do a lot better when you go to school. Been looking for the evidence, ask for the proof, or else you're acting like an awful goof. Don't assume that everything you're told is true, 'cause they'll feed a little bit of nonsense. They'll feed a little bit of nonsense. So they'll feed a little bit of nonsense to you. Now look for the evidence before you're sure, or else your thinking is pretty poor. Be a little skeptical, play it cool, and you do a lot better when you go to school.
Rule number four, don't kid yourself. Which is to say, tell the truth to yourself as well as to others. As the saying goes, tell it like it is. If someone tells you something, you want them to tell it straight. Not to leave things out that should be there, nor to lie or exaggerate. And so, when storytelling, if you're not a real whiz, just try to give the facts, my friend. Tell it like it is. You will think more clearly about something if what you say about it is correct. Jimmy Jones saw a man about 6 feet tall take a bicycle that belonged to Jimmy's friend, Bob. When Bob's father asked what the man looked like, Jimmy said,
"He was a great big guy."
Well, Bob said he'd seen plenty of tall men himself, so to try to top his friend, Jimmy said,
"Yeah, but this guy was really big. He was about 7 feet tall."
Jimmy really didn't intend to lie. He was just exaggerating. There are two kinds of exaggerations. One kind's okay. The other isn't. It's okay when you say,
"Boy, this hot dog tastes so good, I could eat a million of them."
Or,
"I'll bet the Los Angeles Rams could beat the New York Jets by 1,000 points.
Exaggerations of that sort couldn't possibly be true, so people understand them for what they are. But if you say that a 6-foot-tall man is 7 feet tall, that is misleading. If your grandfather gave you $2 as a birthday present, but you exaggerate and say he gave you $4, that kind of an exaggeration is pretty close to a lie. Now, it's bad enough to mislead other people with exaggerations and half-truths, but it's even worse to fool yourself. So whatever you're talking about, always try to state the facts as carefully and correctly as you can. If someone tells you something, you want them to tell it straight. Not to leave things out that should be there, nor to lie or exaggerate. And so, when storytelling, if you're not a real whiz, just try to give the facts, my friend. Tell it like it is. Now here's rule number 5. Understand the difference between the concrete and the abstract. Do those sound like hard words to understand? Well, they're not. Concrete is very easy to understand. One meaning of the word is that hard stuff they make sidewalks out of. But the first meaning is anything that you can touch is concrete. Whatever actually exists is considered something concrete. Baseballs, roller skates, trees, bicycles, rocks, dogs, cats, everything in the world that you can see and touch really exists. There are other things you can talk about but can never touch or see. Things like love, or freedom, or beauty, or democracy, or fear, or happiness. You can't hold a pound of freedom in your hand. You can't reach out and touch happiness. So these words are called abstract words. They're perfectly good words, and they usually refer to ideas that are important. Freedom is important, for instance. But you can't pick up a box full of freedom, can you? So that's another reason, another good reason, to learn how to think well. It helps you to become a better citizen of America and of the world. The concrete you can see or hear or feel, you're reasonably certain it is real. The abstract, on the other hand, cannot be seen. The kind of situation's what we mean. For you can't buy a pound of freedom. You can't pick up a box of love. You can't hold a bag of happiness or gloom. You can't use faith to fill up a room. You can't buy a pound of beauty. You can't pick up a piece of joy. Can't see a bit of any abstract thing. Remember that, my boy.
Here's a scientific fact. Did you know that your body is more than 80% water? I love water. I'm gonna drink some right now.
water, water. Our bodies are made out of water. Over half our bodies, over half our bodies are water. 'Cause it's the loveliest beverage.
Body does a lot of work. Even heartbeats and breathing involve work. To do that work, we need energy. The energy comes from the food we eat. It is stored in food as chemical energy. To make the energy in food available to the cells of our bodies, the food must first be digested. It must be changed to simpler, smaller chemicals that can pass through the cells of our stomach and intestines and into our bloodstream. The blood, as you know, circulates through the body. Chemicals carrying energy leave the blood and enter cells, such as muscle cells, skeletal cells, brain cells, that enable us to do our work. So digestion is important. How does food move through the body? Is gravity needed for food to travel from your mouth to your stomach? Is it food's weight that causes it to fall from mouth to stomach? Let's do an experiment. First, fill a plastic cup with water.
across the chair and lower your head so your mouth can reach the straw. Be sure that your head is well below the rest of your body. Then try to drink the water through the straw. Were you able to drink the water? Your bark is holding your feet in the air. You're upside down. You're defying gravity.
Digested before it becomes part of you. Everything you eat is broken into smaller and smaller pieces inside a long tube called your digestive tract. When your food is digested, it is broken into such tiny pieces that you can't even see them.
When I eat a fig that's big, what do? Digest. When I suck a treat that's sweet, what do? Digest. Digest, digest. My food breaks up in pieces. Digest, hey, hey, digest, hey, hey. My food breaks up in pieces. When I chew a bean that's green, what do? Digest. When I gobble the fish from the dish, what do? Digest. Digest, digest. My food breaks up in pieces. Digest, hey, hey, digest, hey, hey. My food breaks up in pieces. When I sip a drink that's pink, what do? Digest. When I eat a cake I bake, what do? Digest. Digest, digest. My food breaks up in pieces. Digest, hey, hey, digest, hey, hey. My food breaks up in pieces. When I swallow rice that's nice, what do? Digest. When I lick a peppermint stick, what do? Digest. Digest, digest. My food breaks up in pieces. Digest, hey, hey, digest, hey, hey. My food breaks up in pieces. Digest, digest. My food breaks up in pieces. Digest, hey, hey, digest, hey, hey. My food breaks up in pieces. Hey, hey.
Hello kids, this is Captain Jerry Squares. I'm going to read you three excerpts from my book. This book is called Gee Whiz! It's All About Pee! By Susan E. Goodman, illustrated by Elwood H. Smith. Gee Whiz! Pee is a part of our everyday lives. And that's a good thing. Imagine what would happen if we didn't pee. All that water and milk, juicy fruits, and soup building up and up until... Well, it's best not to think about that. Let's just say pee can save your life in more ways than one. Nowadays, they use chemicals instead of... But... Not long ago, drug companies used a part of our pee to make medicine. This substance called uricase helped dissolve the blood clots that cause heart attacks. Pee is... It also... waves warning about another kind of attack. While out with their cattle at night, the Maasai herdsmen in Africa sometimes wake to what seems like a rainstorm. This downpour is actually the sound of, well, their entire herd being at once. The cattle's fear tells the herdsmen that a lion is about to strike. PMD. Doctors have always used urine to diagnose disease. To detect an illness called diabetes, for example, some docs poured pee onto sand to see if it attracted bugs. This idea made sense. Diabetes makes urine sweet. That's why other physicians just dipped a finger in and took a taste. Today's doctors in England are leaving the dirty work to others. Good idea. They have discovered that some dogs can detect cancer just by smelling people's urine. That was nifty. Throughout history, people have also used pee to treat illness. Ancient Greek doctors tried curing madness with donkey pee. Others try to get rid of fever by boiling an egg in the patient's urine by burying it in an anthill. American pioneers treated earaches by pouring warm urine in their ears and plugging them up with cloth. Urine really can clean wounds and help prevent infections. Many years ago, part of a swordsman's nose was sliced off at a duel. A doctor snatched it up, peed on it, and sewed it right back on. The nose healed perfectly. People still use urine as medicine today. What should you do if you're in the ocean and get stung by the jellyfish? Come to shore and pee on the sting. Urine keeps the venom from making you sick. Millions of folks in Germany, South America, and Asia use the liquid to treat more than jellyfish stings. They drink a glass of their own pee each day? They think it will cure the flu, cancer, even baldness. But the African country of Cameroon doesn't like the idea. In Cameroon, pee drinking is a crime that can put you in jail. Well, I mean, come on. We beasties, skin softener, heart medicine. A weapon in the battle against global warming? Pee is clearly a help to us throughout our lives, but did you know that its usefulness begins even before we are born? While we grow in our mother's belt, we float in a sack of fluid. As we get bigger, the sack gets bigger, and the amount of liquid doubles. Towards the end of our time in there, most of the liquid is urine. That's pee. Hey, we had to pee somewhere, right? And it's good that we did. This pee helped us grow. We swallowed it and peed it out over and over again. It exercised our lungs and windpipes so we could eat and breathe for the rest of our lives. Clearly, this was a very important routine. But it's no wonder we're ready to get out of there after 9 months. I mean, come on! In 1815, the coast of Africa. To get back home, they had to cross the very hot and very dry Sahara Desert. When they ran out of water, they survived by drinking camel urine. This is disgusting. We don't talk about it much, but pee is pretty amazing, right? How amazing? Well, let's read our chat. Rome brought civilization to the world in more ways than one. In the first century AD, that is, the city built grand public bathrooms of polished marble. Each toilet had its own bucket of salt water with a sponge tied to a stick for wiping. People paid to use these bathrooms. Then the city made even more money by selling the pee to tradesmen who bleached the clothes with it. Ew. Even ancient Rome had its share of graffiti artists. So officials posted a warning. They adorned the bathrooms with paintings of the gods who would punish anyone who wrote on its walls.
Pee pee in the potty, pee pee in the potty. Starts as milk from mommy, then that goes through your body, and then you make a pee pee. Pee pee in the potty, pee pee in the potty, pee pee in the potty. Starts as milk from mommy, then that goes through your body, then you make a pee pee. Pee pee in the potty.
Everyone Poops by Taro Gomi. An elephant makes a big poop, and a mouse makes a tiny poop. A one-hump camel makes a one-hump poop, and a two-hump camel makes a two-hump poop. Only kidding, ha ha ha. Fish poop, and so do birds. Oh, and bugs do too. Different animals make different kinds of poop, different shapes, different colors, and even different smells. Ew. Which end is the snake's behind? Do you know? And what does a whale poop look like? I don't know. Some animals stop to poop, while others do it on the move. Can you imagine running and pooping at the same time? Some animals poop here and there. Do you know what animal does that? I think it's a bunny. Others do it in a special place. Did you know grown-ups poop? And children poop too. While some children poop on the potty, others poop in their diapers. Some animals poop and pay no attention, but other animals clean up after themselves. Do you know what animal cleans up after itself? These poop by the water, and this one doesn't in the water. Do you know what animals poop near the water or in the water? And this kid, he wipes himself with paper and then flushes it down the toilet. All living things eat too. So, everyone poops. The end.
The Gas We Pass, The Story of Farts, by Shinta Cho. Illustrated by Shinta Cho. Read by Bubby Windbag. When an elephant farts, the farts are really big. People fart too. Bubbles rise, plip, plip, plip. When you eat a drink, you swallow air. If you eat a drink in a big hurry, you swallow a whole lot of air. The air that escapes through your mouth becomes a burp. When it comes out the hole in your bottom, it's a fart. also called passing gas. Besides coming from the air you swallow, farts come from the gases found in your large intestine. These gases are made when leftover food, food that your body doesn't use, is broken down by bacteria, rots, and becomes poop. That's why farts stink. A healthy person releases almost half a cup of gas in a single fart. In one day, just over 2 cups of gas are released in farts, about 17 ounces, or just over half a quart. If you try too hard to hold your farts, your stomach may hurt. You could get dizzy, or you could get a headache. So don't hold them in. Pass that gas. When you begin to fart after an operation, it means your intestines have started working again. Some farts smell bad, and some don't. When you fart after eating meat, fish, eggs, or things like that, your farts smell pretty bad. When you fart after eating sweet potatoes or beans, however, they don't smell very much at all. That's why the farts of animals that eat meat smell so terrible. These farts of animals who eat things like potatoes and grass, such as elephants, rhinos, and hippos, don't smell that bad. But eating potatoes or grass causes lots of gas to build up in their intestines, which makes them fart a lot. Animals such as skunks and stink bugs protect themselves by letting out a smelly fluid from near their holes in their bottoms. This is not farting. And that's the story of farts. Ha ha ha!